I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode number 145 of the Rich Hunter Outdoors Podcast. This week, we got a good guest for you. We're talking to Nick DeCastro from landtrust.com. They are basically the Airbnb for hunting properties. Might sound a little bit confusing. Might kind of sound a little different, and it is a little different. It's not confusing, though. He's going to explain it all in detail on this episode. We got to talk about everything they've got going on over there, some stuff they're planning on maybe for the future. We talked about his background in the outdoors and hunting and how he got to this point of starting this business and how things are going for him. So it's a really cool concept. I really like the idea of it. I'm intrigued personally by it, especially for some turkey hunts coming up maybe this spring or next spring. But I think you guys will be too, and I think you'll enjoy the conversation. So let's get into it with Nick from landtrust.com. This is the Rich Hunter Outdoors Podcast. All right, man. So kind of funny how we got connected, actually. One of your guys came into the deer processing shop up here, and I think my mom was the one telling him about the podcast. We got to talking to him, and he said, you come on some podcasts all the time. So he kind of hooked us up and reached out to do this thing. So thanks for coming on, and I'm looking forward to getting into not only what you got going on at Land Trust, but also kind of getting a little bit of your background, too.
Yeah, sure. Appreciate you having me on, Canyon.
Yep. So let's just get started here with, so when we have new guests on, what we kind of always ask is, who got you started into hunting, and what did you start hunting? So like small game, big game, and who got you started? What was kind of that, the origin story, if you will?
Yeah, of course. I think like probably a lot of us, my dad got me into hunting.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew up in Southern California. I'd like to think that I'm probably the last generation that got to experience like an outdoors oriented, you know, hunting oriented Southern California.
Uh-huh.
I just turned 37. So they've developed an immense amount of Southern California now. There's not really much hunting opportunity down there. But
right.
When I grew up, we hunted a lot of quail over bird dogs in the deserts.
Mm-hmm.
So you're hunting, you know, almost on the Mexican border down there.
Okay.
And yeah, I mean, I think my earliest memory is me hunting doves down there kind of close to the Mexican border in the desert, 115 degree heat with my dad, probably 3 or 4 years old. So
nice.
But yeah, upland birds was pretty much all I did. I didn't hunt big game till 2015 or something like that when I was living in Colorado. So
okay.
It was always, we had Brittany Spaniels and we hunted quail, then sometimes we go up and hunt pheasant and chucker and stuff like that, but that was it. And then, yeah, big game I didn't find till later in life.
Okay. So when did you leave Southern California?
Yeah, I left right after high school. So I graduated high school in 2006 and then went to school in Boston, and I haven't lived there since. My parents still live there, but yeah, it's been a long time.
So you almost couldn't have got any farther from home to go to school.
it was literally the kind of the calculus. I love my family, but I was an independent 18-year-old
right.
young
sure.
guy. So yeah, the farthest away I can get was kind of the most attractive.
I hear you. So then at some point, obviously, you settled back a little more towards that direction. You said you were in Colorado for a while. Is that where you're at now?
No. So now I just actually, my family and I moved to coastal Alabama in September. So
okay.
Throughout my 20s, I was kind of in sales, and I did a lot of digital advertising sales. So mm-hmm. I lived after school in Boston. I went to New York and then Chicago, San Francisco, L.A., Boulder, and then Bozeman. So I didn't live in I lived in Colorado, and I want to say like, gosh, it all blends together, 2015, mm-hmm. 2016. And then I lived in Montana from end of 2016 through just basically September here. So
wow. So you're, well, I guess not now, but we've had at least one other Montana guy on the podcast. We're going to have another one hopefully here in a couple of weeks. So you'd make you'd make three if you weren't going to Alabama, but that's okay. We've had some Alabama guys on too.
Yeah, man.
You don't sound a lot like
I lived
the other
everywhere, and it's nice.
yeah,
Montana is a great place, and we're loving Alabama too.
Awesome. Yeah, the other guys from Alabama have a little bit more of a draw than you, but that's okay.
Yeah, they're actually Southern. I don't want to claim to be Southern. I don't want to start any fights here.
It sounds like you've been a little bit everywhere though.
Been a lot of places. Yeah.
Yep.
So it's. But you know, get to experience a bunch of the country.
Yeah. But didn't start big game hunting until you were out in Colorado, though. Was that elk, I assume?
Mm-hmm.
Or mule deer?
No, it was antelope.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, first big game hunt I ever did was an antelope hunt just kind of like 90 miles east of Denver. I was living in Boulder working for a startup there. And, you know, I just got the itch and had never done any big game hunting ever and got an over-the-counter tag and went out on opening morning and, you know, killed a doe.
Nice.
So yeah, it was, I don't know, you know, you watch enough YouTube and
right.
That's basically how I figured it out. And, yeah, I killed that doe like, I don't know, 20 minutes into opening morning. And I still remember walking up to it and just being like, holy shit, what did I do here?
Right. This is a lot bigger than a bird.
It's a lot bigger than a bird or fish. Cause that's pretty much all I did before was just bird hunting and a lot of fishing.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, that kind of makes sense. A lot of the places you mentioned that you were where you were, there's not a lot of hunting to be had.
No, definitely not. I mainly was, you know, my work was all in cities. So I didn't get to do a ton of hunting and fishing, you know, in a lot of my 20s.
Mm-hmm. So did you dive into bow hunting early on? Are you into that now? Like, or has it been mostly firearm stuff?
Both. As we were talking before, I think we hopped on here. I have three kids now that are all five and under.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually don't, between that and my company, I don't actually get to hunt a ton.
Right.
So, you know, I am a very amateur bow hunter and, you know, rifle hunter. I hunt, I'll basically do it all. I'm not super particular.
For sure. Yeah.
I just like getting outdoors at this point. You know, maybe at some point in the future I can be much more specialized, but it just takes a lot of time, you know?
Uh-huh. Yeah. I understand that. So you had all these, I guess, were all these pretty much sales jobs that you had?
Yes. Yeah. I was just sold ads, basically. I sold a lot of YouTube advertising really early in the kind of the YouTube ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of, and then I sold a lot of, you know, kind of Facebook and, you know, other social and video advertising. So yeah, I was in the advertising industry before I started Land Trust.
What was that like with the early days of YouTube? Because if you graduated in 06, that was like right there as YouTube was created, right? You graduated high school in 06, right?
I graduated high school in 06. Right. I graduated college in 10.
Still really early on.
Yeah, very early. Like I remember, it was Wild West, man. I mean, if you remember YouTube in 2010, I mean, it was still like a platform that people thought of like cat videos and, you know, just like funny stuff. Not, it wasn't a serious place for brands.
Right.
At the time, and I actually personally, I sold Microsoft, GM, and Adobe their very first, quote, YouTube influencer campaigns they'd ever bought.
Nice.
And, you know, you had to basically tell them, like, hey, you can't tell these YouTubers what to say. This isn't a commercial. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it's sponsored content. You have to kind of just let them be who they are because that's why they have followers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that sounds crazy to say. It's obvious. But back then, it was not. It was scary for those big brands to engage with YouTubers.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure that was I'm sure they were somewhat reluctant to dive into that, too, I would think.
Super. Oh, super.
Yeah.
But then it worked, you know. And again, now that's obvious.
Yeah. That's a big part of what any company was doing. I mean, if you're not, then you're missing out on a huge audience.
Yeah.
It's so huge, huge at this point, which is kind of crazy. I mean, that's just a 14-year evolution and to what it's become, but it's pretty wild.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So how did you go from that area into the land game?
Yeah, excuse me. So, you know, when I lived in New York City, I was actually pretty early as a host on Airbnb's platform when they were coming there. So I think I was started listing my apartment in like 2011, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very kind of early for that game. Mm-hmm. And just started to see the power of the sharing economy. you know, and so I hosted for years. Yeah, you know, again, I was traveling all the time, so I was never in my apartment, and you're paying this exorbitant amount of money for a tiny little apartment. Mm-hmm. Hey, I'm out there. Let's make some money and try to offset the cost, right?
Right.
And so that kind of stuck with me. And then when I moved to Montana at the end of 16, I basically was kind of immediately confronted with what today is land trust. And, you know, there's the West has a ton of public land, which public land's amazing and an incredible resource. Mm-hmm. I've enjoyed it a lot throughout my life. But there was also all this amazing private ground and beautiful farms and ranches kind of in town too. Mm-hmm. There in Bozeman when I was living there. And, you know, there wasn't just a really an easy way to kind of connect with those landowners. Of course, we all know door knocking, but mm-hmm. I don't know how it is where you live, but door knocking is a much less fruitful game these days than it probably was 20, 30 years ago.
No doubt.
Yeah. So, you know, I just saw this as an issue, a marketplace issue. There's obviously a ton of supply being the landowners, and there's a ton of demand, like myself at the time, like, hey, I'm willing to pay that landowner for the opportunity to go out and hunt or fish or do whatever for a day, a weekend, whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so that's kind of what led to me starting the company. I didn't start it right away. I was still working for another company. It just wasn't the right time for me. Mm-hmm. And honestly, thank God I didn't start it then. It would have been too early. It would have failed. A lot of building a business like this is just timing. A lot of things out of your control. And if I tried to start it back in 2017, it would have been too early. Mm-hmm. Just things like smartphone adoption, broadband, internet. Mm-hmm. Frankly, COVID was like...
Yeah, that's what I was going to say too.
COVID was terrible, but it was good. It was good in a lot of ways because like our landowners, farmers and ranchers, you know, before COVID, the idea of getting farmers and ranchers on a Zoom call would have been kind of crazy to think about.
Right.
After that, it was possible. Mm-hmm. So... You know, I didn't actually start the company until 2019.
Okay. And then what was it like in the early days of this? Was it pretty rough waters? Did you know exactly kind of where you wanted to head with it? Has it evolved over time? How was that when you started out?
Yeah, my vision for it is the exact same thing it is today. It's really difficult. So, you know, land trust, for people who don't know, we're a land sharing marketplace for outdoor recreation. So think Airbnb for hunting, fishing, camping, all sorts of fun outdoor stuff, right? Mm-hmm. On private land. And so our hosts are predominantly farmers and ranchers who own and operate their ground. And, you know, that's not exclusive, but most of them are. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, our guests are hunters and fishermen and campers and all sorts of people who just want DIY access to land.
Right.
So yeah, in the beginning, when you start a marketplace like ours, it's really hard. You got to beg, borrow, and steal just to get anyone to, you know, any landowner to list their land with you because no one's on it yet.
Yeah, yep.
In the marketplace game, they call it the chicken and the egg problem.
Uh huh.
You know, the hosts don't want to be there unless the guests are there, and the guests don't want to be there unless the hosts are there. So it's really tough in the beginning.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Our partners at Flambeau Outdoors have some of the best solutions in the industry for your decoy and storage needs. They're focused on innovation that matters, and they build their products to last. They're probably most known for their whitetail, waterfowl, and turkey decoys, and that's for good reason. They've got a lot of quality options at great price points in each category. The Boss Buck is a personal favorite of mine in their whitetail line, and I've been throwing their Stormfront mallards in front of duck blinds for years now. Don't sleep on their storage solutions either, though. Whether it's fishing tackle, firearms, ammo, or archery equipment, they've got you covered. They just stepped up their archery storage game, too, with the new Formula Bow Case. It might just be the best bow case on the market. We've been using ours for several months now, and I'm continually impressed with the ease of use and security they provide. Make the most of your time outdoors with Flambeau. Realism that gets results. So this is, like you were kind of explaining it there, it's kind of a alternative, obviously, to private land ownership, but also almost kind of like a mixture between leasing and an outfitter. Like, is that, but it's an alternative to both of those things where it's, but it's almost kind of a little bit of both.
Yeah, so it's a good question. So we're all about DIY access. So it's what traditionally would have been called a trespass fee, really, mm-hmm. if you think about it.
Yeah.
So it's short-term rental, short-term lease. So, you know, on land trust, you can go and we have over 700 properties, about 1.5 million acres in 42 states. And you can go and search by state or species or activities and see properties and connect directly with landowners and you know, book a day, a weekend, a week, a season. You know, it's kind of like up to you and the landowner. And we just make that transaction easy, safe, secure for our landowners. You know, if you've ever used platforms like Airbnb or VRBO, it will feel very familiar to you.
Okay. Yeah. So it's, yeah, like you said, kind of the, I guess then Airbnb, think of that, but for the hunting property. Yeah. There's actually a ton of guys, and I'm sure you know this, but like where we're at, a ton of out-of-state guys will Airbnb. They'll have a lease up here or something, or maybe they've got some private land. Most of the time, they're leasing stuff, though.
I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
But they'll Airbnb a house to stay at while they're up here hunting for the first couple weeks of November or something. So this would be even a, like, I could see a lot of those guys going this route as well, just on the land side. If they can't find a lease maybe, or if they're looking for more, like, this would be a good place for them to go, sounds like.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So again, it's DIY, so it's not outfitter or guide, you know, centric. And I just want to be clear, I have nothing against guides or outfitters. It's just a different business model, you know?
Right.
I often compare, it's like hotels versus Airbnbs. Airbnb has not nor will ever kill hotels.
Right.
You know, I use both of them when I travel for work. I have a hotel, and when I travel with my kids, I want an Airbnb because I want to be able to cook and put them and sleep in their own rooms.
Yep.
Same thing with land trust. You know, if you go to a new place and you want to hunt something new that you've never done before, a guide or outfitter might be a great way to go. But if you're just wanting to go chase turkeys or whitetail or do something you know how to do and you just want DIY access, land trust is a great option. And, you know, generally speaking, we're quite a bit cheaper too, because it's, you know, you don't have the services.
There's going to be a lot of guys too. And I'm sure, again, you've seen this already. There's surely a lot of guys that are, would prefer that, you know, like they don't want to, not to say mess with the outfitters, but you know what I mean. They want to go do that maybe for a week. They want to go hunt whitetails, but they don't want someone that's telling them where they have to go, or like giving them, okay, here's option A, B, and C, where they may go that route. And then like they may see option A, B, and C, and they think if they're looking at this map, gee, option D over here, if you had to stand there, would be great. Now that gives them the opportunity to kind of have the same experience,
want,
but more, way more personalized for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, for me, that's how I've always liked approaching it, is just like, it's a puzzle. You're trying to figure it out. I just want to be very clear. I don't pretend to be some like master hunter by any means. I just really enjoy getting
none
outside.
Of us are.
Any... Frankly, at this stage of my life, just getting outside and, you know, getting away from technology and getting into a camp with some buddies is kind of the whole point. But, you know, I'm not some big buck killer, like stone cold killer. I just like getting outdoors. And so for me, I mean, I basically built the company based on my own desires. I want to be able to go secure a place, especially if I'm in a new state. I don't know anybody. You know, you can show up to public and try to figure it out. Many people do. But frankly, that can be pretty frustrating. And honestly, because of who our landowners are, mostly multi-generation farm and ranch families, a lot of the experience is really cool meeting them. They give you the lay of the land. I mean, who better to kind of tell you how a property works than the people who've lived there their entire lives?
Exactly.
You know, so, you know, while it's not guided or outfitted in many cases, you know, the landowner is going to, you know, tell you to jump in the gator and drive around the property and tell you how stuff works and then say have fun.
Yeah. And even if those guys, and like a lot of them around here, a lot of the farmers aren't necessarily deer hunters. So they're not necessarily turkey hunters, especially turkey hunting. But
totally.
They know where the deer and turkey, they know where they come out in the field every night.
They see them every day.
Exactly. Like they may not be able to tell
you. They watch them every day.
Yeah, they're not going to be able to tell you how to hunt them necessarily, but they can give you some really good information. Well, in the mornings I see them over here, and in the evenings I see them over here. Like that's huge, especially for guys that, you know, DIY, that's two big pieces of the puzzle you were talking about. And
that's right.
Exactly. Like you said, who better to tell you that than someone that's there every day?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And it's also, you talked about public land. Obviously, that can be frustrating where you can spend so much time scouting, off-season scouting, doing aerial maps and stuff like that, find a place that looks great, and it might be a dynamite spot, but then you can't keep the next guy or the next 10 guys from walking right underneath your stand, going going to wherever they want to go, you know? And then on the, the private land side, even if you're looking to go knock on doors, like you said, that's not only is it tougher to gain access that way, it's also a little bit sketchier than it was 20 or 30 years ago.
Totally.
You know, I mean, people are not quite as open to that, especially some stranger pulls up in their drive from out of state plates and they come knocking on their door. Like, you just, on either party, you never really know what you're getting into.
Yeah. It's always just a little uncomfortable, honestly, you know? And especially if you're talking farmers and ranchers, like, you're interrupting their day. Their work day starts when they wake up and ends when they go to sleep, basically. And you just are interrupting them, and that's okay, I guess. But, you know, it's just an uncomfortable kind of way to go about it. And by the way, many people have been successful doing it and made great relationships. I'm not saying that. And by the way, that still exists and it will continue to exist. And I think the good thing to call out there is landowners who lease, traditionally leasing, can't say yes to a door knocker.
Right.
But if they list with land trust and kind of own their own property rights, they can still say yes to door knockers if they want to, or friends or family or neighbors, you know?
Yep. That's, and I mean, let's be honest, people these days too are going to be way more apt to have those interactions through somewhere like land trust than face to face. I mean, there's a lot of people in my generation, I'm about 10 years behind you, that really grew up, hit the first end of the social media wave, kind of like high school or whatever. And they've grown up, especially a little bit younger than me, who are now people who might be looking to do this kind of stuff that just, I don't want to say they don't have the people skills, but maybe they haven't developed them, or they're just not as comfortable with a face-to-face conversation. So this allows them kind of that security of, okay, I'm more comfortable with communicating this way. Not to say one is like right or wrong or whatever, but I'm way more comfortable communicating this way through a website or an app or whatever. And that's going to open the door to a lot of people,
too. It's more convenient. Yeah, it's more convenient for, honestly, for both sides.
Yeah.
Again, a physical door knock, you're interrupting somebody's day because they don't know you're coming, right? So you're just showing up. And, you know, so for something like land trust, you can find properties you like. You can message a landowner. They get a text message. They can respond to it when it's convenient. And you guys can talk. And, you know, that's a great way, easy way to connect. And that's what marketplaces like ours, you know. Airbnb, VRBO, Uber, all these marketplaces make these kind of formerly sketchy transactions more trustworthy and transparent and just kind of easier to do, you know?
Yep. So what are you seeing mostly, or maybe it's a mix, like, are there more guys in the Midwest doing this for whitetails? Is it out west for big game in the South? Like, what's the most popular thing that you've seen land trust used for, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, certainly turkey hunters love us.
I can see that.
I think, for 24, I know in 23 we did more turkey bookings than anything else. Obviously, whitetail kind of close behind. This year, upland hunters discovered us, and upland hunters really, I don't think it's going to overtake turkey, maybe. But then, of course, whitetail's up there. And, you know, I started the business in Montana. And so Montana, we have, you know, a ton of amazing properties up there. And so then you have mule deer and elk and all, you know, all that stuff. But I would say probably turkeys we do the most bookings.
That actually makes a lot of sense to me, and even the upland thing, because if you think about whitetail hunting, a lot of guys that are gonna want to go out of state and do something, if, depending on how serious they are with the whitetail thing, they want to have control of that for most of the season. They may want to do food plots, you know, they want to put their stands up and leave them for a year.
They want to manage it. Yeah,
exactly. Yep. Have different setups for different times of year. Whereas turkey hunting, a guy's not necessarily going to want to pay the freight on a year long lease or a 6 month lease or something, or even a 3 year lease in some cases, just to hunt for, like, take Illinois, for example. If you draw one season, you have a week to hunt. Maybe you, let's say you put in for two seasons. Okay, now you got two different weeks you can hunt. Guys aren't going to want to pay, you know, the whole price.
It just doesn't make sense to pay for the whole year, right?
Exactly, it's when, like, you could just do this for a week. Yeah, so that makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
That's just...
Yeah, but don't get me wrong. Like, we do a ton of big game and a ton of whitetails.
Yep.
And look, I think it's also really important to call out, land trust is about opportunity, not outcome. And I think this is a really big kind of thing to call out. People who use land trust are looking for an experience and opportunity. We tell people all the time, hey, if you're not going to be happy unless you kill a 200-inch deer, you need to call an outfitter. because that's, and I'm not judging one or the other. I want to kill a 200-inch deer at some point in my life.
Right.
But, you know, it's just a different mindset. Mm-hmm. Or if you put in for 15 years for this one tag and you finally drew it, you know, and your friends can't go with you because they didn't draw the tag or whatever, like, it might be a good idea just to call an outfitter, you know, mm-hmm. and get that done. Not to say that you couldn't, like, we have plenty of properties in incredibly, like, hard to draw big bull units in Montana or places like that, mm-hmm. that are amazing. But it's just it's a bit of a mindset. You know, the two kind of major trips that we see booked on land trust for hunting specifically are what we call like the hunting vacation, which is, hey, I want to go somewhere new with a group of my friends or my family, mm-hmm. and, you know, have some new experiences and create lasting memories around hunting. Mm-hmm. And it's usually a multi-day kind of, trip with multiple people.
Yep.
And then, you know, the other one is kind of how I first started it, which is, hey, I want to find a place within, let's call it 2 hours of my house that I can sneak away to for, you know, a Saturday that I get, you know, the okay from the wife. Mm-hmm. And just have it to myself. I don't want to stress about showing up to a trailhead on public with 15 trucks.
Yeah, right.
It's just stressful, right? Like, mm-hmm. I don't have a lot of time to go outdoors like I used to. I always say I'm genuinely envious of like the younger guys and gals out there who can scout 30 days a year and hunt 45 days. Or mm-hmm. that's amazing. Mm-hmm. It's not reality for me, you know.
Right. Yeah. Then you don't want to have that one Saturday and, like you said, go to the trailhead and there's already a ton of people there.
Yeah, it just kills it for me, you know?
Yep.
I'm going outdoors basically to relieve stress, and that kind of scenario is stressful.
Yes, very, you know? Very. We talk a lot on here in different episodes about expectations, especially when it comes to, because we do a lot of whitetail stuff, obviously. So
when
it comes to setting your expectations for the season, like if you are dead set on killing a 200-inch deer, well, there's a very good likelihood that you're not going to be successful in your own eyes for that season. If you're one of the guys right. that, if you want to go out there and maybe it's kill a mature deer, okay, your chances are getting better, and it all depends on where you're hunting,
yep.
of course. If you're if you're just out there to have the experience or to go out there and enjoy the outdoors and stuff, well, now, you know, if you kind of set that as at least part of it, then you're going to be
yep.
more successful year in and year out, because you can kind of guarantee that, especially with options like this, what you're talking about. And there is a lot of people who do it for that reason. Like you said, everybody wants to kill a 200-inch deer. Everybody wants to kill a 360 bull, right? But mm-hmm. the reality of that is just, it's not that high of odds that that's going to happen to you. Could it? Absolutely.
That's right, yeah.
But
yeah.
you can get out there and enjoy the outdoors and have the experience without that and have just as good a time as the guy who does kill the 360. You know, you have just as good of memories.
By the way, sometimes more so.
Absolutely.
I've talked to a lot of guys who are in camps where they do kill big bulls.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the guy will, you know, it's usually costs a bit of money. And mm-hmm. they come in, and I've heard many stories where they come in, kill the bull, and leave. And
yep.
it's just like, you know, okay, I'm not judging it. Like, that's fine. It's just not what I'm looking for.
You miss out on a lot.
At this stage of life, it's just like, hey, this is the one time a year you get a couple buddies together and spend 3 to 5 days or whatever it is, however much you get, with your friends
mm-hmm.
or your family. And it's around this thing we love, the outdoors and hunting. And yes, it's amazing to be successful, but you know, that's a little bit more of the mindset.
Mm-hmm. There's actually a lot of the hunts that I've been on with the buddies or the guys that we hunt with in our group, the ones where we've been unsuccessful or even ones where we've been really close to successful, but it didn't work out. Some of those are the best memories I have of being out there in a stand or out hunting, as opposed to the one where we did end up killing something. And then there's that aspect too, you're talking about with the group of guys. I can have as much fun sitting in a tree stand with one of the guys in our group. Maybe we don't see anything all morning, as if I go by myself and I end up killing something, you know, there's just that experience is a big thing about hunting that I do think a lot of people miss, that maybe it's, they get caught up in all the social media stuff, guys posting these trophies that they're
totally.
Taking all the time. So they feel like they have to do that or they're not going to be happy.
Yeah.
But I do think there's a lot of people who are still out there for that. And there's a lot of people who miss out on that.
Yeah.
I hope it gets,
I'm the guy who loves camp. You
yes.
know, like I like doing it all, but I just like camp, you know, mm-hmm. again, I got 3 young kids, a job, I work a lot. And it's just like, man, it's just nice to be out and disconnect from all of it, hang out with some buddies or your family, whoever it is. And yeah, get out in the morning, approach it, and do it how you approach the property how you want, and then come back and talk and have a good time. And for me, that's like at the stage of life I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
That's like the most important thing for me, honestly.
Yeah, like you said, it's kind of a little vacation, even if it is just that Saturday and Sunday or whatever. It's a little break from everything else. So we talked, obviously, you said you're in 42 states, so 1.5 million acres. What is the cost like, kind of an average for a Western property versus maybe one in the Midwest versus one in the South? Is there generally a pretty drastic difference, or does it kind of just depend?
Yeah, I think it depends. I know that maybe some people are frustrated by that answer, but I would say, like, we offer everything from squirrel hunting for a day. You could go bass fish a pond for $20 to, a full week on a big ranch to hunt elk with lodging, which is expensive, so it could be anywhere in between, very cheap to expensive. It's all based on what the experience is.
Yeah.
So generally speaking, if you think about turkey hunts, now our properties, a lot of them do.
I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Have lodging capability. Mm-hmm. And lodging for us could be, there's none. So the landlord just says, hey, look, I got land. I got nothing out there. I don't want you camping on it overnight. So stay in town and you can just use the property, sun up to sundown type thing.
Mm-hmm.
To, hey, we'll allow you to tent camp, or you can pull your camper and park it there. To, they have a bunkhouse or a barn they've outfitted to, like, a really nice house that you can stay in.
Mm-hmm.
So we have all sorts of different, it spans the gamut. And so I mentioned that because that will affect price. So if you go and stay on a property, you book a property that's got a really nice house that you and your buddies can stay in, obviously it'll cost a little bit more because you have the lodging component.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say, for just like, think about turkeys, I'd say that probably the average rate for turkeys is probably $125 a day per hunter, for just, for a property that's got birds. Now if you then it's like, how big is the property? How great is the population of birds? Does it have lodging? All of those other things, then can kind of determine the price from there. But it's really accessible. I mean, almost all of our sportsmen are just blue collar guys and gals. This is just the thing we love to do. So, Western big games, it's probably gonna be a little bit more expensive, but I'm still thinking, like, mule deer hunts, I don't know, a couple $100, $300 a day. So accessible
for sure.
Now a big ranch with a really strong herd of big bulls, of course that's going to be different,
should be. If you're like most hunters out there, at some point you've dreamed of having a piece of hunting ground to call your own. Maybe you finally decided to make those dreams a reality. If so, you need to talk to our guy, Rodney Hawkins. Rodney is a land specialist with Midwest Farm and Land. If you haven't heard of them, they aren't your average real estate company. While they do deal in traditional residential and commercial real estate, their specialty is recreational and farm ground. With agents like Rodney serving across the state of Illinois, no matter what you're looking for, they can find it. Even if you want to sell what you already have to upgrade, downgrade, reinvest, whatever, they've got you covered. For more information, you can contact Rodney at 618-925-3153, and he'll get you taken care of. On top of what he does for MFL, Rodney also has his own company called RG Outdoors. They currently carry hard and soft-sided blinds, blind chairs, tree stands, and cameras from Radix Hunting, Tacticam trail cameras, Fission e-bikes, and he's adding new stuff all the time. I've personally used all of these products, and I'm beyond happy with every one of them. The Fission e-bike is a game changer, and you will not find a better one for the price. If you're interested in anything RG Outdoors has to offer, you can send them a message to their Facebook page, RG Outdoors, email them at rgoutdoors@yahoo.com, or again, just call Rodney directly at 618-925-3153.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where the value is for, like we said, you can, it's going to be different values to different people too. And it's going to be kind of, sounds like you can pay for the experience you want too. If you want that, like, kind of gritty hunting camp where you just go and you pitch some tents, you can do that and be a little bit less expensive. Or if you want something that's a little bit more of a luxury, obviously you're gonna have to pay for that. Just like anything else, it sounds like.
Just like, yeah, honestly, I mean, if you go on Airbnb, you can rent anything from a $20 a night hostel to a $20,000 a night castle, right? Right.
Yep.
And that platform has it all. So we want to offer the full span of things as well.
Mm-hmm. So you said you started in 2019, and then obviously everybody knows COVID in 2020, mm-hmm. and that changed a lot of things. And one of them it changed was, I believe, outdoor recreation and the use of properties for outdoor recreation. Like we saw hunting numbers jump. Here at our shop, the numbers of deer harvested went up after that because there were more people hunting. There's some other factors for that in Illinois too, but that was definitely a big one. And then also land prices have been pretty crazy the past few years.
Oh, yeah.
We have a partner who does, he works with Midwest Farm and Land, and obviously they do real estate sales. Yep. So we actually talked to him on just this week. And we were getting into kind of that and where he foresees the market going and whether it's softening and finally starting to soften a little bit or not. But how does that affect you guys? How have you seen that affect Land Trust since its inception in 2019 to now?
Yeah, so we launched the website October 2nd of 19. So we just crossed 5 years in October this year.
Okay.
We were honestly too young to catch, like, we just didn't have enough properties in, you know, whatever, what was it, March, when everything shut down of 20?
Yep.
So we were just too small. You know, if that something like that happened now, it'd be very different for us.
Mm-hmm.
But like I mentioned on the landowner side, again, almost all of our landowners are multi-generation farm and ranch families. And so, you know, for us, COVID was obviously terrible for so many reasons. But one of the things that did help is a lot of farmers and ranchers who probably wouldn't have leaned into technology as much mm-hmm. started to lean into it more. And, you know, you had more broadband in rural areas and Zoom became a thing that kind of everyone did.
Mm-hmm.
And so it did help us go and, you know, reach a lot more landowners versus having to be face to face, you know.
Mm-hmm. How much?
And I would say general outdoor recreation, of course, has stayed, you know, it kind of spiked there.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think, I was reading a report recently. The numbers have stayed elevated. It has not everyone has retained,
right?
But certainly, you know, outdoor recreation has stayed up.
Yeah, that makes sense to me too because it's one of those things. I think a lot of people, and maybe a lot of people pre-COVID that didn't get into it because there's a lot of different reasons, right? That caused that. There was the prices of food, groceries, meat prices skyrocketed. Oh, yeah. So like people were going out and having to do that so they could afford to eat. And that's one side of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's people who, well, they couldn't do anything else, especially like if you were in a big city or something where everything was very strictly locked down. Like, okay, but you can drive 2 hours away and go hunt or something, go hunt some public ground.
Yep.
And it's probably a lot of people who before, maybe not necessarily like looked down their nose at it, but never really considered it to be something that they would enjoy. And I think after their first exposure by necessity or by just lack of other things to do, probably discovered that they really enjoyed it and stuck with it. And I think that's an experience that a lot of people have is whether they just don't understand it, they've never been exposed to it, but they get out there and there's just something about not only the experience of being out there, but then when you do harvest something, like,
oh yeah,
and from that point, like not only the harvest, but then whether you clean it or you take it to a processor, getting it back and putting it on your table and being able to say, like, basically start to finish, I put this thing on the table, and it is definitely a different outlook on how you get your groceries, and there's something a little bit different about eating something that you've put the work into as opposed to just going to the market and buying it and throwing it on the table.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I know that some people in the hunting world are upset that a bunch more people started hunting. I am not one of those. Mm-mm. Of course, I have a business that's centered around it, but separate that. It's good. Like, mm-hmm. I think it's good that more people understand that you have to take life to feed yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that it's not cellophane wrapped and it comes from somewhere.
Yeah, yep.
So I'm a very big proponent, even with my daughters, like, you know, when we eat meat, regardless of what it is, you know, I say, hey, what kind of animal is that? That's a cow. That's a pig. That's a deer, whatever. Right. So it's just like, hey, there's breeding animals and you should know that. And they watch me butcher stuff. I like to butcher my own stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I don't do is snack sticks, so that's the one thing I miss at
Right.
processors. But I like to do kind of primal cuts and sausage and stuff. I need to learn how to make snack sticks, but yeah, processors usually are really good at that. So yeah, I think it's positive. And to me, as you mentioned, for new hunters, I think just seeing an animal in nature, being close, even if you don't get to kill it, right? Having a doe walk by your ground blind at 20 yards, if you're new, even now, like I was out opening weekend here in Alabama, and I kind of killed a few does. I just passed, but it's still fun. It's great. Raccoons walk by you, whatever. Like you're just out in nature.
There's probably something like instinctually from like however many thousands, millions of years ago when we started doing that, that is still kind of inside of everybody that you just were,
Oh,
some people
yeah.
are just so out of touch with. But once you do get it, like you're saying, you're just out in nature and it kind of feels natural. There's something about it that, I don't know, something clicks in your brain. It's like,
Yep.
I'm supposed to be doing this, you know? And it's,
Yeah,
even
we're
if it's not,
predators. We should be hunting.
exactly. And even
Yeah.
if it's not killing something, like you said, just being out there, having those experiences, like I've been deer hunting all my life and I've been fortunate enough to kill some decent deer and I don't know, countless number of does, right? But still, me and a buddy of mine were hunting in a ground blind earlier this year and had a doe walk by, like almost could have reached out the blind and touched her. And it's still like, that's just a
It's still cool.
super
Still
cool
cool.
experience. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can't get that indoors or at your normal job, you know, it's just, it's definitely a different experience that is obviously appealing to a lot of people. And I'm with you. I'm not one of the people who thinks that the more that come in that get upset about that or, cause, and I understand part of it. Like, yes, it makes access tougher. It makes public land tougher. There's more people who are leasing ground. There's more people buying ground to hunt. So maybe that's taking up some of your hunting spots. But ultimately, like, big picture, the more hunters that we have, the more people who understand what we do, the better we're going to be because there are so many people who aren't that way and they could cause us a lot more problems than the people who are new to hunting and are starting to understand it. Because
Well, yes.
there's a tax
And
on
I
what we
think,
do all the time.
yeah, and that's the key thing, right? So I grew up at the beach and I surfed, right? So maybe some people like to ski or snowboard or golf or do other stuff outdoors. No one's out there trying to make those activities illegal. Nobody. Hunting is different. And so we need people, even if they aren't hunters themselves, to understand and appreciate hunting because voting. You look at Colorado, they banned mountain lion hunting. Like people are actively trying to make hunting illegal. So in order for that to not happen, we need people to vote for things to keep hunting legal. And so it really is unlike any other outdoor pursuit that I know of in that people are well organized, well funded, and well motivated to make it illegal for us to do. And if you think that's crazy, look everywhere else around the world where it's been, outlawed.
No doubt. There's plenty of examples across the globe of where that has happened and how it happens. And you know, the more people that we do have, the more people that can vote, and the more apt, because there are so many hunters that still don't vote, you know, that are already into it. And
I know it's so frustrating.
yeah, and it's just like
I
we were
was on
saying.
the Oh, sorry.
Are
I
you
was gonna
good?
say I was on the kind of advisory board for Hunter Nation for a while, and that was their whole mission is like there's this huge block of people that don't vote. They're all hunters, and like a really high percentage of them. I mean, I don't know how they participated in this last election, but Hunter Nation was whole purpose was to basically organize and get out the vote of hunters.
That's something we talk about a lot too, and it's not even like forget about the national level.
Oh,
If
it's the
you're a
local and state
hunter,
stuff.
exactly, get out there and vote in your local and state elections because that's what's going to affect you more, especially as an outdoorsman and a hunter, and affect your rights to go out there and enjoy the outdoors. I mean, just like you said in Colorado, there's been plenty of examples of, you know, the game camera stuff. We had a bill that was introduced. It made it through the House, and I think it died in the Senate here in Illinois. They were trying to ban contests for fur bearer hunting. So, like, what it
Oh
was
yeah.
based around was like the raccoon competitions and the coyote competitions. But then like us personally, we run a big buck contest. So like, could that creep into, you know,
of course
that potentially
could.
Being
of
a
course
little,
they want to target that.
Exactly. So like, that's the kind of stuff that you should be paying attention to and going out and voting for, even if you don't give a crap about who's running for president. Like, that stuff will directly affect you and your rights to hunt. So you got to pay attention to it. And you got to go out and do your due diligence on that kind of stuff.
We need to grow the tent. We need more people, even if like someone comes and tries hunting once or twice, and maybe it doesn't light the fire like it does for, you know, a lot of us, but at least they see it and they understand and they say, okay, yeah, I'm for hunting. Maybe hunting isn't my thing, my passion, but I understand it. And, you know, I'll vote to keep these things legal. Like that's, I mean, even if we get that, we need to grow the tent.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I completely agree. The more, the merrier. We've had that discussion in Illinois specifically because they introduced the crossbow hunting year round. And not that there's some things that aren't negative about that, but one of the big positives to it is it has introduced a lot of people to hunting that either it didn't hunt at all before, or they only firearm hunted, which is like 10 days a year, not even 10 days, like 7 days a year in Illinois if you don't black powder hunt for that last season. So like ultimately there's some things that I think need to change to sustain what we have, but there is definitely a lot of benefit to introducing more people into the sport, like we've been talking about.
Absolutely. Yep. 100% aligned.
So let's get back a little bit here. We'll go a few more minutes and then I'll let you get out of here, but let's get back to land trust for a second. So you also said you guys were in 42 states. You got 700 properties. Are most of those where you'd think they would be? Are there any kind of interesting off the radar places people kind of might find interesting that you wouldn't think about with those properties?
Yeah, I think, you know, basically the evolution of the business and the growth of it, Montana is where it started the company. Mm-hmm. Although, you know, funny enough, as I mentioned earlier, like starting a marketplace is incredibly difficult. Buyers don't want to be less, sellers are there, vice versa. So it's chicken and the egg. I actually launched the company in New Jersey. So I was based in Montana and I just, you know, was trying to find landowners who would list. And it's really difficult when you have zero landowners, you know? Mm-hmm. Kind of a younger farmer in New Jersey. I found him on a hunting forum. New Jersey Hunting Forum or so. That might be the name of it. Mm-hmm. And he's probably around my age. And he's like, yeah, man, let's do it. Let's try it. And he had like, I can't remember, 8 or 10 farms. You know, let's call it anywhere from 80 to 140 acres, nothing crazy. And he said, let's do it. So, you know, we actually launched it in New Jersey with those 8 or 10 properties. And, you know, whitetails, turkeys, geese, right? Mm-hmm. And so I feel like that might be unexpected. And there's a ton of hunters in New Jersey. And by the way, for your listeners who are thinking like New Jersey is Newark or, you know, some city dystopian, you know, concrete jungle.
Right.
I mean, New Jersey is phenomenally beautiful. It's called the Garden State for a reason. Mm-hmm. That was kind of an unexpected thing for me.
New Jersey's not at the top of the list of places you would think about.
Yeah, totally. You know, we're really strong in Montana, Nebraska, North Dakota, Kansas, Missouri, getting better and more in Iowa. Mm-hmm. And then we're moving kind of down here. Colorado's starting to come online a little bit more. And then, you know, the South and Southeast, I just moved to Alabama kind of intentionally. We have a lot of sportsmen who live here who use land trust, who've used this over the years to go west or to the Midwest. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're going to put more and more ground on here so that they can do things closer to home, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm trying to think of any. Louisiana, I went gator hunting in September on one of our properties.
Nice.
I had the opportunity to kill a big gator. We killed a lot of gators, but I killed a big one.
Yeah.
And that was really cool. Totally, totally different for me. I've never done anything like that before.
That would be different for a lot of people, I would think.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Ridge Hunter Outdoors podcast. If you've made it to this point, hopefully you're enjoying the show. And if you are, go over to our Facebook page and our Instagram. Give us a follow. It's Ridge Hunter Outdoors. We also have a private Facebook group. That's Ridge Hunter Nation. You can go over there and answer a couple questions and If you're a regular listener of the podcast or you watch any of our shows on YouTube or Carbon TV, you get in that group and just use it as your normal hunting group. Share your success, your failures, pictures, whatever you got, and we'll also give you some extra content in there. I'll ask questions on that, maybe do some surveys occasionally, and we'll also give you guys the opportunity to ask questions for any of our guests that we might have coming on, if we have them lined up in time and that's available. You'll find that at Ridge Hunter Nation. That's on Facebook. Our website is ridgehunteroutdoors.com. That's where you're going to see our scent line, Ridge Hunter Scents, our buck tarsal spray, doe tarsal spray, and our calming spray. All of our apparel is available on the website, and our food plot seed, when it is in stock, is available on the website too. If you want any of that stuff, make sure you use our discount code RHOPOD or Full Draw, all caps on either of those, no space, and you get 10% off your entire order. We also have our entire catalog of podcasts on the website, and our video series are available on there as well. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any other audio platform, give us a like, follow, subscribe, whatever it lets you do, and that'll let you guys know when our episodes come out. They're not always as consistent as we want them to be, but we try to shoot for Monday and Friday. Sometimes it gets on a Tuesday or a Saturday maybe for an episode, and that way you'll know when they come out. It also really helps us without costing you anything. If you're listening to this on YouTube, hopefully you're already subscribed to the channel. If you're not, make sure you do that. If you're not listening to this on YouTube and you're not subscribed, make sure you go over there and do that at Ridge Hunter Outdoors, just like everything else. That's where you'll find our Fall Pursuit Show, Spring Strutting, all of our off-season vlogs will be on there, and much more. If you guys see a video or are listening to a podcast on there and you're enjoying it, just drop us a comment. Hey, good show. Really enjoyed it. Something simple. Give the video a like. That really, really helps us out. And again, it doesn't take much of your time at all. You can also find Fall Pursuit on Carbon TV, and Spring Strutting will be on there this spring as well. So make sure you go over to Carbon TV. They have a lot of great shows to offer, and ours will be on there also. Thanks for listening, guys. We really appreciate you tuning in when you do. Now let's get back to the episode. Do you guys have, I know you have agents, correct? Like, that would help people. Are they helping people get their land listed mostly?
Yeah. So, we have had in the past landowner success managers, and those were kind of boots on the ground guys and gals that we hired in the specific states we were opening. Uh-huh. We're getting to a point in the business now where, you know, a lot of landowners now can come and see that we have, again, about 1.5 million acres on. Mm-hmm. We're not some like newfangled idea that right. No one's doing.
Right.
We've grown a bit. And so, yeah, we absolutely have a team internally that helps our landowners onboard. So we build all their listings. We make it really easy. Again, mm-hmm. most of our landowners are farmers and ranchers. They're very busy people. So we want to make it as easy as humanly possible for them to kind of list with us.
Right.
But we have had landowner success managers up until very recently who were phenomenal and helped us open new markets and just build trust mm-hmm. when you're in a new place. Mm-hmm. I'm actually personally kind of doing that down here in Alabama right now.
Nice. So let's get into kind of to wrap it up here. Let's talk about how sure. both sides of the coin here, how that the landowners yep. can get their stuff listed, and then what's the best way for the hunters or the users, the end users, to yeah. to find those properties.
Sure. Sorry, I'm coughing.
Oh, you're good.
Yeah. So for landowners, Landtrust.com. I would like to say we're very service oriented, so you can always call or text us on either side. We have a phone number. You're not going to get like AI chatbots or anything. You're going to talk to real people. We are all day, every day talking to both our landowners and, you know, our customers. Mm-hmm. So Landtrust.com is a great way for landowners. There's a landowner page that has all sorts of video testimonials from landowners all over the country who've used us for years, talk about their experiences and all that. So if this is marginally interesting to you as a landowner, you can just call us or text us and we'll happily answer any and all questions for you. It doesn't cost you any money to list with us. Mm-hmm. We are business partners with our landowners. You know, we only make money when they do. So we make money on a transaction. Mm-hmm. It's 80-20. So they make 80% of it. We get a 20% commission.
Nice.
On bookings. And then for sportsmen, Landtrust.com, you can go and on there and search by state or species or, you know, activities. Again, hunting is a huge piece of what we do, but fishing, camping, farm and ranch experiences, there's a bunch of other stuff there too. And those are growing. Mm-hmm. And then we released a new product that you should check out It's called Field Notes. And so it's landtrust.com/field notes. And you can kind of think about it almost like Instagram for land trust properties. So our landowners are pushing out updates. So you'll see like iPhone videos from farmers with showing like, you know, deer that they're seeing out on the combine or turkeys or game cam photos and videos. And so you can follow properties on land trust that you're interested in, and you'll get pushed, you know, essentially like an activity feed of what's going on there.
Nice.
It's really interesting. We'll have, you know, when people have reviews and they upload photos, you'll see all that stuff there. So you can kind of like follow properties that are near you or places that you're thinking about going to and just kind of follow along. It's almost like knowing the landowner and getting them to text you photos. You know?
Yeah, but it's kind of real time.
They don't have to do that. Yeah, it's basically, you know, whenever they post it, you'll get notified if you're following it.
That's awesome. Because that'll help. I mean, that'd be huge for a lot of guys that are like the ones that are coming in from a different state or a completely different area, because they're going to want to know, hey, when are things getting good so I can book this for the week or whatever, potentially.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, if it's already booked, obviously.
Absolutely. And I want to stress, a lot of, because we're kind of newer from kind of traditional ways to do it, I want to stress that through when you use land trust, you directly connect with landowners. So you can send a land, you don't have to just go straight to booking something. You can contact a landowner and ask them questions and talk directly to them. So, you know, that's a you know, really good thing. And our landowners are very upfront. You know, they are not, again, nothing against guides or outfitters, but there's a different economic incentive underlying. Like if you're an outfitter or a guide, you've laid out money for leases and you need to sell hunts to make the money back with a profit, right? Our landowners don't have that economic incentive. They own the land. They live there. They work there. This is not their primary business.
Yeah.
And so I say that because, you know, they're not trying to sell. I look back at like Kansas, the last couple of years has had a pretty good drought, pretty bad drought. Sorry. And we saw a lot of like turkey and upland bird hunting inquiries come through, like, you know, people contacting landowners. And our landowners in Kansas said, hey, look, there's been a drought. The bird numbers aren't great. We're just not going to do anything this year. We're not going to book anything. So I think, you know, it's just a different dynamic. They're not trying to
for
sell
sure.
you on something.
Yeah. That's worth a lot.
You
can, peace of mind,
it
especially.
Is, yeah. Because I mean, you live, and maybe your family's are farmers or ranchers, but these are salt of the earth people. They're handshake people. And the last thing they want is to, you know, oversell something and have you have a bad experience. They don't want that. You know, so they're just, if you have a question, if something looks interesting on land trust, just contact them, send them an inquiry, and, you know, ask them whatever questions you might have.
Awesome. So are you guys on social media anywhere? You can kind of let people know where they can find you there too.
Yeah. So land trust on Instagram, it's landtrust_hunt. If you're a landowner, we're starting to build out a kind of a separate landowner channel. I think it's, oh gosh, I don't have social media, so it's a bad question. I haven't had social media personally since like 2015. But yeah, landtrust_hunt's like the main one, and I think we're on Facebook too.
Okay.
So you can follow us there.
Yep, I'll link all that in
YouTube.
The description too.
Yeah, and YouTube.
Okay, cool. Is there anything else you want to add before we get off of here? And we'll have you on again sometime too. I think there's a lot of stuff we could talk about even outside of land trust. So we'd definitely have you on again. But is there anything else you want to hit this time before we wrap it up?
Yeah, I would say, again, if you're kind of a sportsman and anything we're talking about sounds like it's kind of, even if it's kind of interesting, take 15 seconds, create a free land trust account. And when you create an account, we ask you, hey, what are you interested in? Are you interested in hunting or fishing or camping or other stuff? If you tell us, hey, I'm interested in hunting. Then we ask you what states you're interested in, what species you're interested in, where you like, what state you live in. And you take 15 seconds to tell us that. And then we'll send you properties that match your interests. Almost like, I don't know if you've ever used Zillow or you know, something like that. Think about it like that. You basically tell us what you're interested in, and we'll just send you properties as they come on.
Yep. No waste of time scrolling through a bunch of listings.
Yeah. That's right. We're scouting for you 365 days a year for free.
Nice. Nice. All right, man. Well, I think that's a good place to leave it for now. Again, everybody, landtrust.com. I will link everything that you mentioned in the description. And like I said, we'll have you on again sometime if you want to do it.
Yeah, I really appreciate having me on, Canyon.
Yeah, no problem, man.
I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at Geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.